Chapter 27. As to Mr. Pecksniff, he told them in the fly that a good action was its own reward, and rather gave them to understand that if he could have been kicked in such a cause, he would have liked it all the better. But this was no comfort to the young ladies, who scolded violently the whole way back, and even exhibited, more than once, a keen desire to attack the devoted Mrs. Todgers, on whose personal appearance, but particularly on whose offending card and hand basket, they were secretly inclined to lay the blame of half their failure. Todgers was in a great bustle that evening, partly owing to some additional domestic preparations for the morrow, and partly to the excitement always inseparable in that house from Saturday night, when every gentleman's linen arrived at a different hour in its own little bundle, with his private account pinned on the outside. There was always a great clinking of pattens downstairs too, until midnight or so, on Saturdays, together with a frequent gleaming of mysterious lights in the area, much working at the pump, and a constant jangling of the iron handle of the pail. Shrill altercations from time to time arose between Mrs. Todgers and unknown females in remote back kitchens, and sounds were occasionally heard, indicative of small articles of ironmongery and hardware being thrown at the boy. It was the custom of that youth on Saturdays to roll up his shirt sleeves to his shoulders, and pervade all parts of the house in an apron of coarse green baize. Moreover, he was more strongly tempted on Saturdays than on other days, it being a busy time, to make excursive bolts into the neighboring alleys, when he answered the door, and there to play at leapfrog, and other sports with vagrant lads, until pursued and brought back by the hair of his head, or the lobe of his ear. Thus he was quite a conspicuous feature among the peculiar incidents of the last day in the week at Todgers. He was especially so on this particular Saturday evening, and honored the Miss Pecksniffs with a deal of notice, seldom passing the door of Mrs. Todgers' private room, where they sat alone before the fire, working by the light of a solitary candle, without putting in his head and greeting them with some such compliments as, "There you are, a gin. ..." and it nice? ..." and similar humorous attentions. "I say, ..." he whispered, stopping in one of his journeys to and fro, "young ladies, there's soup tomorrow. She's a making it now. And she a putting in the water? Oh, not at all neither." ..." in the course of answering another knock, he thrust in his head again. "I say, there's fowls tomorrow. Not skinny ones. Oh no." ..." presently he called through the keyhole. "There's a fish tomorrow. Just come. Don't eat none of him." ..." and, with this special warning, vanished again. By and by, he returned to lay the cloth for supper, it having been arranged between Mrs. Todgers and the young ladies that they should partake of an exclusive veal cutlet together in the privacy of that apartment. He entertained them on this occasion by thrusting the lighted candle into his mouth and exhibiting his face in a state of transparency, after the performance of which feat he went on with his professional duties, brightening every knife as he laid it on the table by breathing on the blade and afterwards polishing the same on the apron already mentioned. When he had completed his preparations, he grinned at the sisters, and expressed his belief that the approaching collation would be of rather a spicy sort. ..." "Will it be long before it's ready, Bailey?" ..." asked Mercy. "No, ..." said Bailey, "it is cooked. When I come up, she was dodging among the tender pieces with a fork, and eating of them." ..." but he had scarcely achieved the utterance of these words, when he received a manual compliment on the head, which sent him staggering against the wall, and Mrs. Todgers, dish in hand, stood indignantly before him. "Oh, you little villain!" ..." said that lady. "Oh, you bad, false boy!"
No worse than yourself, retorted Bailey, guarding his head, on the principle invented by Mr. Thomas Cribb.
"Ah, come now. Do that again, will yer?"
apostrophe, apostrophe, he's the most dreadful child, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers, setting down the dish, I ever had to deal with. The gentlemen spoil him to that extent, and teach him such things, that I'm afraid nothing but hanging will ever do him any good.
Apostrophe, won't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Bailey.
Oh, yes. What do you go a lowering the table beer for then, and destroying my constitution?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, go downstairs, you vicious boy, apostrophe, said Mrs. Todgers, holding the door open.
Do you hear me? Go along.
Apostrophe, after two or three dexterous feints, he went, and was seen no more that night, save once, when he brought up some tumblers and hot water, and much disturbed the two Miss Pecksniffs, by squinting hideously behind the back of the unconscious Mrs. Todgers. Having done this justice to his wounded feelings, he retired underground, where, in company with a swarm of black beetles and a kitchen candle, he employed his faculties in cleaning boots and brushing clothes until the night was far advanced. Benjamin was supposed to be the real name of this young retainer, but he was known by a great variety of names. Benjamin, for instance, had been converted into Uncle Ben, and that again had been corrupted into Uncle, which, by an easy transition, had again passed into Barnwell, in memory of the celebrated relative in that degree who was shot by his nephew George, while meditating in his garden at Camberwell. The gentleman at Todgers had a merry habit too, of bestowing upon him, for the time being, the name of any notorious malefactor or minister, and sometimes when current events were flat they even sought the pages of history for these distinctions, as Mr. Pitt, young Brownrigg, and the like. At the period of which we write, he was generally known among the gentlemen as Bailey Jr., a name bestowed upon him in contradistinction, perhaps, to old Bailey, and possibly as involving the recollection of an unfortunate lady of the same name, who perished by her own hand early in life, and has been immortalized in a ballad. The usual Sunday dinner hour at Todgers was 2 o'clock, a suitable time, it was considered for all parties, convenient to Mrs. Todgers, on account of the bakers, and convenient to the gentlemen with reference to their afternoon engagements. But on the Sunday which was to introduce the two Miss Pecksniffs to a full knowledge of Todgers and its society, the dinner was postponed until 5, in order that everything might be as genteel as the occasion demanded. When the hour drew nigh, Bailey Jr., testifying great excitement, appeared in a complete suit of cast-off clothes several sizes too large for him, and in particular, mounted a clean shirt of such extraordinary magnitude, that one of the gentlemen, remarkable for his ready wit, called him collars on the spot. At about a quarter before 5, a deputation, consisting of Mr. Jenkins, and another gentleman, whose name was Gander, knocked at the door of Mrs. Todgers' room, and, being formally introduced to the two Miss Pecksniffs by their parent who was in waiting, besought the honor of conducting them upstairs. The drawing room at Todgers was out of the common style, so much so indeed, that you would hardly have taken it to be a drawing room, unless you were told so by somebody who was in the secret. It was floor clothed all over, and the ceiling, including a great beam in the middle, was papered. Besides the three little windows, with seats in them, commanding the opposite archway, there was another window looking point blank, without any compromise at all about it, into Jenkins' bedroom, and high up, all along one side of the wall, was a strip of panes of glass, too deep, giving light to the staircase. There were the oddest closets possible, with little casements, in them like 8-day clocks, lurking in the wainscot and taking the shape of the stairs, and the very door itself, which was painted black, had two great glass eyes in its forehead, with an inquisitive green pupil in the middle of each. Here the gentlemen were all assembled. There was a general cry of "Hear, hear!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, and "Bravo, Jink!" Apostrophe when Mr. Jenkins appeared with Charity on his arm,
which became quite rapturous as Mr. Gander followed, escorting Mercy, and Mr. Pecksniff brought up the rear with Mrs. Todgers. Then the presentations took place. They included a gentleman of a sporting turn, who propounded questions on jockey subjects to the editors of Sunday papers, which were regarded by his friends as rather stiff things to answer, and they included a gentleman of a theatrical turn, who had once entertained serious thoughts of coming out, but had been kept in by the wickedness of human nature, and they included a gentleman of a debating turn, who was strong at speech-making, and a gentleman of a literary turn, who wrote squibs upon the rest, and knew the weak side of everybody's character but his own. There was a gentleman of a vocal turn, and a gentleman of a smoking turn, and a gentleman of a convivial turn. Some of the gentlemen had a turn for whist, and a large proportion of the gentlemen had a strong turn for billiards and betting. They had all, it may be presumed, a turn for business, being all commercially employed in one way or other, and had, everyone in his own way, a decided turn for pleasure to boot. Mr. Jenkins was of a fashionable turn, being a regular frequenter of the parks on Sundays, and knowing a great many carriages by sight. He spoke mysteriously too, of splendid women, and was suspected of having once committed himself with a countess. Mr. Gander was of a witty turn, being indeed the gentleman who had originated the sally about collars, which sparkling pleasantry was now retailed from mouth to mouth, under the title of Gander's Last, and was received in all parts of the room with great applause. Mr. Jenkins, it may be added, was much the oldest of the party, being a fish salesman's bookkeeper, aged 40. He was the oldest boarder also, and in right of his double seniority, took the lead in the house, as Mrs. Todgers had already said. There was considerable delay in the production of dinner, and poor Mrs. Todgers, being reproached in confidence by Jenkins, slipped in and out, at least 20 times to see about it, always coming back, as though she had no such thing upon her mind, and hadn't been out at all. But there was no hitch in the conversation nevertheless, for one gentleman, who traveled in the perfumery line, exhibited an interesting knick-knack, in the way of a remarkable cake of shaving soap which he had lately met with in Germany, and the gentleman of a literary turn repeated, by desire, some sarcastic stanzas he had recently produced on the freezing of the tank at the back of the house. These amusements, with the miscellaneous conversation arising out of them, passed the time splendidly, until dinner was announced by Bailey Jr. in these terms: "The Whittles is up." On which notice they immediately descended to the banquet hall, some of the more facetious spirits in the rear taking down gentlemen, as if they were ladies, in imitation of the fortunate possessors of the two Miss Pecksniffs. Mr. Pecksniff said grace, a short and pious grace, involving a blessing on the appetites of those present, and committing all persons who had nothing to eat, to the care of Providence, whose business, so said the grace, in effect, it clearly was, to look after them. This done, they fell to with less ceremony than appetite, the table groaning beneath the weight, not only of the delicacies, whereof the Miss Pecksniffs had been previously forewarned, but of boiled beef, roast veal, bacon, pies, and abundance of such heavy vegetables as are favorably known to housekeepers for their satisfying qualities. Besides which, there were bottles of stout, bottles of wine, bottles of ale, and divers other strong drinks, native and foreign. All this was highly agreeable to the two Miss Pecksniffs, who were in immense request, sitting one on either hand of Mr. Jenkins at the bottom of the table, and who were called upon to take wine with some new admirer every minute. They had hardly ever felt so pleasant, and so full of conversation, in their lives. Mercy, in particular, was uncommonly brilliant, and said so many good things in the way of lively repartee, that she was looked upon as a prodigy. In short, apostrophe as that young lady observed, they felt now, indeed, that they were in London, and for the first time too. Apostrophe, their young friend Bailey sympathized in these feelings to the fullest extent, and, abating nothing of his patronage, gave them every encouragement in his power, favoring them, when the general attention was diverted from his proceedings, with many nods and winks and other tokens of recognition, and occasionally touching his nose with a corkscrew, as if to express the bacchanalian character of the meeting. In truth, perhaps even the spirits of the two Miss Pecksniffs, and the hungry watchfulness of Mrs. Todgers, were less worthy of note than the proceedings of this remarkable boy, whom nothing disconcerted or put out of his way. If any piece of crockery, a dish or otherwise, chanced to slip through his hands, which happened once or twice, he let it go with perfect good breeding, and never added to the painful emotions of the company by exhibiting the least regret. Nor did he, by hurrying to and fro, disturb the repose of the assembly, as many well-trained servants do. On the contrary, feeling the hopelessness of waiting upon so large a party, he left the gentlemen to help themselves to what they wanted, and seldom stirred from behind Mr. Jenkins' chair, where, with his hands in his pockets, and his legs planted pretty wide apart, he let the laughter, and enjoyed the conversation. The dessert was splendid. No waiting either. The pudding plates had been washed in a little tub outside the door, while cheese was on, and though they were moist and warm with friction, still there they were again, up to the mark, and true to time. Quarts of almonds, dozens of oranges, pounds of raisins, stacks of biffins, soup plates full of nuts. Oh, Todgers could do it when it chose. Mind that. Then more wine came on, red wines and white wines, and a large china bowl of punch, brewed by the gentleman of a convivial turn, who adjured the Miss Pecksniffs not to be despondent on account of its dimensions, as there were materials in the house for the decoction of half a dozen more of the same size. Good gracious, how they laughed! How they coughed when they sipped it, because it was so strong! And how they laughed again when somebody vowed that, but for its color it might have been mistaken, in regard of its innocuous qualities, for new milk. What a shout of no! Apostrophe burst from the gentlemen, when they pathetically implored Mr. Jenkins to suffer them to qualify it with hot water, and how blushingly, by little and little, did each of them drink her whole glassful, down to its very dregs. Now comes the trying time. The son, as Mr. Jenkins says, gentlemanly creature, Jenkins never at a loss. Comma is about to leave the firmament. Miss Pecksniff. Apostrophe says Mrs. Todgers, softly, will you? Apostrophe apostrophe oh dear, no more, Mrs. Todgers. Apostrophe Mrs. Todgers rises, the two Miss Pecksniffs rise, all rise. Miss Mercy Pecksniff looks downward for her scarf. Where is it? Dear me, where can it be? Sweet girl, she has it on, not on her fair neck, but loose upon her flowing figure. A dozen hands assist her. She is all confusion. The youngest gentleman in company thirsts to murder Jenkins. She skips and joins her sister at the door. Her sister has her arm about the waist of Mrs. Todgers. She winds her arm around her sister. Diana, what a picture! The last things visible are a shape and a skip. Gentlemen, let us drink the ladies. Apostrophe, the enthusiasm is tremendous. The gentleman of a debating turn rises in the midst, and suddenly lets loose a tide of eloquence which bears down everything before it. He is reminded of a toast to which they will respond. There is an individual present, he has him in his eye, to whom they owe a debt of gratitude. He repeats it a debt of gratitude. Their rugged natures have been softened and ameliorated that day by the society of lovely women. There is a gentleman in company whom two accomplished and delightful females regard with veneration as the fountain of their existence. Yes, when yet the two Miss Pecksniffs lisped in language scarce intelligible, they called that individual father. Apostrophe apostrophe there is great applause. He gives them Mr. Pecksniff, and God bless him. Apostrophe they all. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.